year, Rudenko told Interfax news agency. He noted that interaction with Iran through central banks and credit institutions has been also actively developing. At the end of January, the creation of a direct communication channel between Russian and Iranian banks was fixed on paper through the synchronization of national financial messaging systems, which are the SPFS and SEPAM, the diplomat said. The move would allow cross-border transactions without using the Western financial messaging system, SWIFT. Cooperation between Iran and Russia accelerated last year amid Western sanctions on the two countries. Throughout 2022, the countries reached a number of agreements, expanding cooperation from barter supply deals for Iranian turbines, spare parts, and aircraft equipment to contracts for the joint construction of natural gas pipelines. Trade between Tehran and Moscow surged by 15% last year, reaching $4.6 billion, official data shows. The Islamic Republic of Iran has recently signed up to the Russia-led Eurasian Economic Union, EEU, which ensures the free movement of goods, services, and capital between member states.
This is IRIB English Radio. IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
Supplication on Saturdays. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Bismillah, words that seekers of sanctuary repeatedly recite. Words that the very cautious in search of protection often repeat. I seek refuge with Allah, the Exalted above all. From the oppression of the unjust, from the deceitful malice the envious use to lay snares and traps, from the injustice and outrage of the tyrants, and I sing his praise. Do better and go beyond other praisers. O Allah, thou art one, has no partner, and is the Lord Master without being made. There is no discrepancy or nonsense in thy commands, nor there is lawlessness in thy kingdom. I beseech thee to send blessings on Muhammad, thy servant, thy messenger. To let me ask thee for enlightenment and inspiration, so as to be thankful for thy bounties, which alone get thy approval ultimately. To help me to obey thee and instinctively worship thee, and make me deserve thy rewards on account of thy very patronage. And have mercy on me, and prevent me from breaking in the bounds of thy prohibitions, as far as I am kept alive. and show the way unto that which is useful and advantageous till I go on survive. To let me take to heart the meanings of thy book, and by its reading, throw down the heavy burden of sins, and receive welfare and salvation as a gift. Let not my family and friends who love me leave me alone. Let thy favors reach me in abundance during the remainder of my life, exactly as they used to be made available for me in full in the days gone by. O, the Most Merciful.
Us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
News in the Ukraine war is not so much about advancements on the ground as they are about military assistance to Ukraine and Zelensky's guest appearances, like his most recent visit to the UK, then the Elysee Palace in France, and then the EU capital in Brussels, all in a span of a few days. His request, more aid and military equipment, in particular fighter jets. No surprise there. Will he get it? How much aid does he want? How many more requests, and how much longer will Russia tolerate the pumping of military equipment to Ukraine, while all leaders of the Western world have said, we are with you, Ukraine, till the end? First, let me introduce our guest for this edition of The Spotlight. Andriy Dobryansky, chair of the UN Affairs, the Ukrainian World Congress, joins us from New York. Also joining us, Harley Schlanger, who's at the Schiller Institute in Germany, who joins us from Potsdam, Germany. Welcome to you both. Harley Schlanger, if I may start with you first. We're taking a look at the appearances that Zelensky has made in a span of days, as I said in the intro, looking at the UK and he addressing the parliament there, then moving on to the Elysee Palace. The French president and the German chancellor were there, and, of course, the EU. Why do you think Zelensky has to make these appearances in the first place? I must add in the Oscars, Wall Street Bells when they open up, and other appearances where he has been appearing via live video stream, which in this case he didn't do in the past three appearances. What do you make of these appearances in the way that he has made them?
Well, I think he's in trouble. He's in trouble in Ukraine. He's shuffling his government. The corruption charges are starting to have some real traction. And their military has been badly damaged by the war. They're running short of ammunition. They're running short of soldiers. And the Russians are preparing an offensive. So it's not so much about Zelensky as it is NATO. Because the decision to have him come to Britain, I mean, look what he did. He met with King Charles. Boris Johnson was at his elbow every step of the way. He met with Sunak. He addressed the parliament. This is all part of a big show. A show of NATO unity. And what they're trying to do, I think, is to convince President Putin that he should back down. Now, also the discussion of the weapons. You know, there are a number of key American military experts who are saying that the tanks are going to be a while before they get there. They may not be decisive. But what Zelensky went to London, Paris, and Brussels for was fighter jets. And up to this point, the U.S. has said no to fighter jets, the Germans also. However, they've changed because they said no to tanks initially. The reason he wants fighter jets and long-range precision missiles is that he wants to target Crimea. And this is where the situation becomes extremely dangerous, because if the West crosses one more red line, and Putin has said Crimea is Russian territory and that Russia will do everything it needs to defend Russian territory,
right.
This is pushing the situation to the brink of a much bigger war. So I think they're trying to shore up the sense of support for Ukraine. But it's also, look, there are big demonstrations in Europe now. So the situation is not so good for NATO.
Okay. Andrzej Dobryansky, do you agree with the viewpoints there that Harley Schlanger relayed, especially, of course, the Ukraine stance overall?
Of course not. These appearances, as you mentioned, these are state visits. So this is the head of a state coming to several different countries. And then, as you said, in Brussels, meeting with several heads of state together, not only to have discussions. We all see the group picture at the end, but it's about the discussions, talking about how support for Ukraine will go on. And almost everybody unilaterally mentioning that they will continue to support Ukraine's sovereignty and territorial integrity. That is the way the rest of the world has seen it, and that is the way that is the only way out for the end of this war, which is Putin withdrawing his forces, not, as you mentioned, having some sort of red line. There are six territories that have been occupied by Putin's armies. There are war crimes happening on those territories every day. There is no need for the rest of the world to be okay with these war crimes. At some point, Mr. Putin and all the officers who are involved in this will be held up in some international tribunal.
All right. I'm no military expert, but this is what I'm going to ask you, and I'm wondering if you can help me out in terms of trying to figure this out. You know, we hear about these military assistance and equipment on a rather consistent and continual basis. So my question is, why not just ask all of the equipment that Ukraine needs in one swoop? Get together with the EU, with the U.S., with whatever countries, and just ask for it and make it clear as to what you're going to get and what you're not going to get. Because it seems like these are just incrementally being asked and then provided. You know, with the F-35s or with fighter jets at this point, I'm not even sure if anybody has committed to it or not. But it's something that may be committed to, just like with other military assistance where, for example, the tanks, they asked for it, they said no. Germany and the U.S. vehemently, outright rejected that idea, but then they gave in. So why not ask for all of it and for the other countries to make their mind up whether they're going to give it or not?
Well, yes, Ukraine has been asking for equipment. Some of that equipment has been passed along to Ukraine. Some of it hasn't, and then Ukraine keeps asking. So it defeats the logic of your question, saying that Ukraine should just have one list, and then it's either yes or no. The question is protecting Ukraine, protecting its sovereignty and its right to its territorial integrity. So Ukraine will keep asking so long as the West is ready to give more. We know that there's a promise from Poland to hand over fighter jets as soon as other countries are okay with that as well. We know the United Kingdom is in the same place already trading fighter pilots. So similar to the other technologies, it's a step-by-step process of international diplomacy, not just demanding things from the rest of the world. These are valid states, okay. Independent states, sovereign states, asking each other for help in this crisis.
Okay. Harley Schlanger, one of the reasons why I asked that question is because as we take a look at the requests that are being made, people are dying from both sides. People are dying in Ukraine. There are soldiers that are dying. There are people who are dying. And, of course, Russian side is also has its death toll increase as this war is dragging on. So is there, what are we getting at when it comes to the Ukrainian side asking for it and then the other side, and I'm putting them as a whole, EU, Europe, NATO countries, US, and they're not providing the military equipment at this point. I think, based on what they have said, they don't want to have that confrontation head on with Russia. Is that why they're incrementally providing Ukraine with this equipment?
Well, let me say that I think Mr. Dobryansky is right about one thing. Zelensky has been asking for this from the very beginning. He's been asking for much greater weaponry than has been provided, much more support, much more money. And the reason the West has been holding back is they're very much concerned that this is going to spin out of control. Now, one point I want to make in contrast to what he said, the rest of the world is not against Russia. One of the problems Europe has is with the so-called Global South, which refuses to give the support that's being demanded by Zelensky. Look what happened when Scholz went to Brazil recently. Lula turned him down on ammunition, turned him down on the green policy. Lula said that they want meetings for peace. Much of the world wants peace. Zelensky doesn't. And this goes back to the whole reason why this thing started. There was an effort to get a peace agreement through Minsk, and the West lied to Russia repeatedly. And what were they doing? Why were they lying?
Right.
To have time to build up their military so they could go to war with Russia.
Can I have that part of your statement addressed to Andriy Dobryansky? Andriy Dobryansky, Zelensky
sure.
doesn't want peace?
No, Zelensky wants peace for his people, obviously. That requires, by definition, Russia leaving the territory of Ukraine. Unless that happens, repeated war crimes will continue to happen. And these war crimes are part of the reason that the rest of the world has decided to provide more and more equipment, because they cannot stand by as women as old as 82, children as young as 4 are victims to sexual violence.
Okay.
At the same time, let me please address the rest of the world. I believe there are 3 nations from Africa on the UN Security Council, and they are part of the strongest voices condemning Russia's neocolonialism in Ukraine. So I'll make sure that the record stands that, you know, some of the strongest words I've ever heard about condemning this war come from African nations. In the case of Brazil and other South American nations, I personally know that the governor of the São Paulo province and many mayors and local administrators throughout Brazil have made numerous statements in support of the Ukrainian people. So you can't just say that, yes, one nation, in terms of its democratically elected leadership, is making one decision, but you can't say that that represents all Brazilians.
Harley Schlanger,
there's
go ahead.
There are diverse.
Let Harley Schlanger respond to you then.
Sure,
Harley
sure,
Schlanger,
sure.
Go ahead.
Yeah, look, the idea that 3 African nations represent a majority of Africa, much of Africa has refused to condemn the Russians for the invasion. Much of Africa, countries like Indonesia, Algeria, Nigeria, South Africa. I could go through a list, but that's not the point. You want to talk about war crimes. What about what was done against the people in the Donbas for 8 years when there was supposedly a peace process underway? I think this is a fallacy that's being presented here in terms of saying it's all Russia, it's all Russia. The Russians went in to defend people who were Ukrainian, living in the Donbas, who were of Russian descent, defend them from networks that go back and trace their roots to the Nazis in the World War II period. So if you want to talk about war crimes, let's talk about that. But in terms of the rest of the world, you have the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, the BRICS, you have the Eurasian Economic Union. Many countries are saying there should be peace.
Okay.
The Pope has called for negotiations. The Ukrainians say no negotiations until Russia leaves. And Putin is saying he's not leaving until there are security guarantees for the Russians who live in eastern Ukraine.
Okay.
So I think you have to look at this in a much different way than Mr. Dobryansky is looking at it.
Mr. Dobryansky, as our guests are addressed to you, let me get your reaction on what Putin said recently. Quote, those seeking to defend Russia on the battlefield apparently do not realize that a modern war with Russia would be entirely different for them. We're not sending our tanks to their borders, yet we have something to respond with, and it would not be limited to armor use only. Everyone must realize that. What do you think about that?
I think Mr. Putin's army has been shown to be a paper tiger in Ukraine. That is quite evident. That is quite evident with the tens of thousands of prisoners they rely on to field their forces on the battlefield. We've seen this as far back as the interventions in Syria as well as Georgia. In Georgia, where a MiG was shot down with a simple man pad. And we also see that Russia is afraid of using its air force because of the possible damage to it. This is not a world where combat ready force, clearly, and Ukraine has exposed it. Let me just ask you about the
hypersonic missiles that Russia has.
Yeah, they used them anywhere?
I'm sorry?
Have they used them anywhere?
Well, they've said they have them, and they said that it's, you know, I'm sure you're familiar somewhat with it. I just know that it's faster than
speed. But have they used them anywhere?
They said that they may. I'm just curious. And they may have other things in their arsenal.
And I've described them as a paper tiger. We have seen that roughly one-third of all artillery that they've used, ballistic missiles that they've used, have failed. Another third have not detonated. And a third have found their target.
Okay.
So
Harley Schlanger,
this is the state of Russian technology, military technology that we're talking about.
Okay, I don't know anything about it, really. Let me have Harley Schlanger perhaps address that. Harley
sure.
Schlanger, go ahead.
Well, I would disagree with his assessment of the situation. The Russians initially were hoping that they could come into Ukraine and force a negotiated agreement. The Ukrainians have, by Ukrainians, I mean the Zelensky regime, has no wish for an agreement because they're being directed by NATO. Remember, end of March last year, there was a near mediation and a negotiated settlement, and NATO sent Boris Johnson to scuttle it. There have been other efforts made to bring this about. Now, meantime, when you want to talk about the deployment of war crimes, what about the article that just came out yesterday by Seymour Hersh exposing that Biden was the one who ordered the destruction of the Nord Stream pipelines, which is affecting the life of every single person in Europe? Now, what you have to look at is the European governments are holding back because they're weak, because in Paris, in France, 3 million people in the streets last week against the war. Denmark, 60,000. We're going to see growing demonstrations against the war because it's costing a huge amount of money for something Indeed. That is not in the interest even of the Western
Sorry countries. To jump in, Harley Schlanger. I saw Andrich shake his head. Go ahead.
I know that those protests that are being mentioned, the number is obviously inflated, but those aren't necessarily protests solely against helping Ukraine. Those are protests altogether against government involvement in a whole host of things. So that's one thing. But in terms of what Ukraine is doing, Ukraine is not, and you will not see Zelensky at all these appearances, as you mentioned at the beginning, or these state-to-state visits, talking about no negotiation. Since September of last year, President Zelensky has outlined a 10-point peace plan. We would love for the rest of the world to get on board with some of these peace plans, and they don't all need to happen at the same time. I believe President Zelensky is actually willing to talk about all of these one by one, the first of which is that we should remove all military forces from the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant. That is a basic tenet of all international law, and everybody should be behind that. So it's simple tenets like these that eventually lead up to his final point, which is a tribunal for all the people who have committed war crimes in Ukraine. But in terms of negotiating,
President Zelensky has put out a peace plan out there. The Ukrainians who killed the civilians in Donbass, should they be brought before military tribunals?
I know that there are some conspiracy theories being propagated, such as whatever blog post, as the U.S. government has mentioned about Mr. Hersh's quote-unquote reporting, which is all based on one anonymous source. So in terms of conspiracy theories, there's not that much that I can, really talk about. But
well,
I can
talk about the killing that went on in the Donbass, the killing of civilians in the Donbass that went on for 8 years.
Is this something
that
Roger Waters testified about? Who testified about this at the UN Security Council? Roger Waters?
The people who lived there.
The people who lived there testified
the West,
to...
Who were being suppressed from talking in the West.
Testified
it's called
to the UN
a conspiracy theory.
There is a special rapporteur for war crimes
saying,
in Ukraine.
Are you saying that there haven't been casualties in Donbass inflicted by Ukrainian forces? Are you saying that?
I'm saying that there's a special
rapporteur
for war
crimes. Will you go on record and say that there are no civilians killed?
I'm telling you that there's a special rapporteur for war crimes in Ukraine. All of that is laid out in public. All the reports. You can read exactly what's happening. But what you're alluding to, again, in these numerous conspiracy theories, trying to tie together some red thread on the wall, is that listening to musicians like Roger Waters, listening to film actors like Steven Seagal are the experts we should be talking to, as opposed to actually going to Ukraine and talking to people, which is what I do on a regular basis.
Well, how about the Ukrainians who are the Russian civilian Ukrainians who have given statements about what they lived through with the shelling of their schools and the killing of their children? I can't believe you're calling that a conspiracy theory.
I don't define people based on their blood or ethnicity, some kind of weird nationalistic thing. There are Ukrainian citizens.
These are people who have...
Okay.
The Bandera supporters inside the military do use racial definitions. And that's one of the reasons they continue to attack the people in the Donbass. And that is not a conspiracy theory. And if you're saying
All right, let's
that,
move on.
I think it is.
Let's move on to something
I think if you're talking
that,
about somebody who died 80 years ago as leading an army, I think that's a conspiracy theory.
Andrzej Dobrianski, let's move on to another issue, which is something that even the Ukrainian president has realized was a problem. Can you guess what that is?
No.
Okay.
Corruption.
Exactly. Okay, so what's going on with the corruption scandal? 9 top officials And, of course, the most high-profile one was the defense minister, if I'm not mistaken, and then a cabinet reshuffle. Do you, or a government reshuffle, do you see that being, because Ukraine has been described as having a lot of corruption in it. It's been described. I can come up with some sources. First of all, what do you think of that? How far-reaching is the corruption that has come about, based on the aid, at least, just that portion of it?
I think when certain people mention that they can find sources citing Ukraine's corruption, normally that refers to decades-old or years-old information, especially prior to this full-fledged aggression, as well as prior to the revolution in 2014. If you look at international corruption indices, you'll actually see that Ukraine's invader is actually ranked higher on a scale of corruption than Ukraine. That's just a known stated fact. As to what's happening in Ukraine, no, the defense minister hasn't been reshuffled. There was an early report out. Somebody tried to jump the gun and saying, absolutely, he's being moved out. Defense Minister Reznikov has said that's not the case. It's still not the case. And in terms of what happened in Ukraine, it's actually a standard of anti-corruption that most countries would be jealous of. I would be jealous of it here in the United States if there was a scandal that came out in the press. And 3 days later, the scandal being that some prices for eggs bought for the military were high, some prices for wheat were low, and who was making money off of this? Within 4 days, numerous officials in the defense ministry were relieved from their positions and taken under investigation. That is a standard that many Western countries cannot match, nor is that something you would ever see in Russia.
Hardy Schlanger.
That's because you're the recipient of hundreds of billions of dollars from the West. Now, I'll give you a couple of sources that have cited corruption since 2014. The Panama Papers, Transparency International, which is one of the most authoritative institutions looking into corruption, lists Ukraine as the most corrupt country in Europe. Now, you can take that up with them. I'm just saying that what we're looking at is a regime which is going around asking for billions of dollars and was unwilling to provide the normal papers and normal accounting procedures that governments would take. That's why there's a corruption scandal. And Zelensky is going to use this reshuffling or the alleged reshuffling to say to his Western partners, look, we're trying to deal with this. Don't hold back the money. We'll take care of it. I think that's not a conspiracy theory. I think you have to look at that quite as a serious problem.
All right. My last question to each of you. First, to you, Andriy Dobryansky. Sure. The Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has warned that Russia was building up its troops to take revenge because of this one-year anniversary coming up, whereas 1 year, not anniversary, but marking the time when this operation took place. You called Russia a paper tiger. I'm curious as to whether a paper tiger with in possession of so many nuclear warheads should be called that.
Oh, absolutely. They've been using the fear-mongering of nuclear warheads for decades. As actually almost as soon as President Putin came to power, he's talked about launching nuclear weapons at Poland, against Turkey, against a whole slate of nations. He's never used them. We don't even know if they work. So, in terms of what's happening, people are actually dying, and those should be addressed before we talk about these figments of Putin's imagination.
All right. Hardy Schlanger, in response to our guest there. Less than a minute, please.
Well, I think what we're going to see is that it's not a paper tiger. If it's such a paper tiger, why do you need $100 billion of American taxpayers' money to send weapons to you? I mean, this is a fraudulent conception you're presenting. No one wants to see war. No one wants to see killing. But the question is, will Zelensky sit down with a clean slate and talk with Putin? This is what Pope Francis has requested. He's offered the Vatican as a venue. And I haven't heard anyone in Ukraine say they're willing to do that yet. The Russians said they would be willing to do that.
Okay, we're going to leave it there. Thank you very much. It was a great discussion. Andriy Dobryansky, Chair of UN Affairs, Ukrainian World Congress from New York, thank you. And Hardy Schlanger, thank you. Schiller Institute, Germany. Potsdam, Germany is where he spoke to us from. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight from Mikhail Vitagway and the team. It's goodbye.
from east to west. Throughout the vast land of Iran, you're listening to IRIB English Radio. In the limelight.
A new survey has found that 1 in 4 Europeans have trouble heating their home. According to this survey, more than a quarter of Europeans are experiencing problems heating their homes and paying debts for housing and utilities. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of RT wrote in this regard, more than a quarter of Europeans are experiencing problems heating their homes and paying debts for housing and utilities. The Hungarian media reported recently, citing a survey by the Sedovec think tank. According to the survey, dubbed Europroject, 26% of the sample, representing roughly 100 million people, are unable to properly heat their homes. Greeks appear to be the worst affected, with 56% of the population facing difficulties with heating. In Portugal and France, 34% of residents describe the same problems. Finland, Hungary, Austria, and Denmark were the least affected, with less than 15% of residents admitting to difficulties. Every fourth respondent in the survey said they were unable to pay their heating bill at least once during the past year. That figure was also the highest in Greece, with 51% of the population affected, followed by Cyprus with 37%, Ireland and Bulgaria with 35% each. The respondents blamed inflation for their problems, as rising prices on everything from energy to food impact their ability to pay bills. According to the survey, heating bills have become far less affordable than in 2021. The authors noted that in 2021, based on data from Europe's official statistics agency Eurostat, only 6.9% of European households, some 29.9 million people, were unable to adequately heat their homes, and 6.4% struggled with paying bills. The survey was conducted among 38,000 randomly selected European adults between October 13th and December 7th, 2022. The research covered the EU, UK, Norway, Switzerland, Moldova, Albania, Kosovo, North Macedonia, Montenegro, Serbia, and Bosnia-Herzegovina. Meanwhile, Guardian reported more than 700,000 people in England and Wales are living in homes without central heating this winter, 1 in 10 of whom are elderly and ill, according to figures that lay bare the plight of the most vulnerable. The new official data highlights the extreme end of the conditions being suffered by those who live in 4-meter homes, the government rates as non-descent for failing to meet basic standards. With the country enduring its chilliest month, charities lobbying for the rights of elderly people have warned that cold homes could cause 10,000 unnecessary deaths this winter. A government spokesperson, when approached for comment, described the lack of central heating in homes as completely unacceptable, but ministers stand accused of failing those living in the worst conditions. Office for National Statistics ONS analysis based on the 2021 census shows that 699,500 people live in a home without central heating in England. London has the largest number of households without central heating, 76,190, followed by the rest of Southeast, 49,875, the Southwest, 42,550, and the Northwest, 47,710. There are a further 15,496 homes in Wales without central heating. Confirmed figures are due to be released from 2021 census recently. The ONS further reports that among those living without central heating in England, 68,100 are aged 65 and over with long-term health conditions. A central heating system provides warmth to a number of spaces within a building from one main source of heat, typically a gas boiler in the UK. Holly Holder, the Deputy Director for Homes at the Centre for Ageing Better, said the number of homes without central heating in England is truly shocking. We have among the worst and least efficient homes in Western Europe, and often it is older people who have to reside in these subpar properties. The life and death and implications of this are really being seen now as we enter the bracing cold of midwinter at the height of a cost of living crisis, she added. The consequences of such a poor standard of housing are deadly. Cold homes kill. The UK has a high excess winter mortality, far greater than in much colder European countries such as Norway, where properties are better insulated. Rishi Sunak is already under fire for his U-turn on plans for local compulsory house building targets that could raise the standards of the country's housing stock. The policy was dropped after pressure from Tory backbench MPs. One in five, 21.5% of excess deaths in England are related to cold homes, with the UK as a whole said to have among the oldest and poorest quality housing stock in Western Europe. Recently published data from the English Housing Survey has highlighted the poor state of the country's private rental sector, in particular, with 23% of private rentals failing to meet the decent homes standard in 2021 to 2022. That compares with just 13% of the owner-occupied homes and 10% of social housing. James Anderson, the founder of the Disability and Elderly Plumbing and Heating Emergency Repair, a community initiative in the northwest of England for those unable to fix their homes, said he regularly came across houses without central heating. The plumbing and heating engineer recently launched a funding appeal for an elderly woman in Houghton, Liverpool, who was relying on a small electric heater to keep her warm. Anderson warned she was unlikely to survive the winter in her dilapidated and freezing terrace home. Irene has had to get used to this, but she shouldn't have to. She nearly cried when we told her we were going to help her out, he said. Matt Copeland, the head of policy at the fuel party charity National Energy Action, said there had been a failure to help the poorest households retrofit their homes, leaving them reliant on expensive and inefficient electric hectares in many cases. Households without central heating are some of the worst affected by the energy crisis and are twice as likely to be fuel poor than households who do have centrally heated homes, he said. They're also significantly more likely to live in the least energy efficient properties. This winter, with prices high and temperatures dropping, those homes will find it prohibitively expensive to stay warm at home. It is imperative that fuel-poor households that are off the gas grid are prioritized for any future target support. A government spokesperson said they were currently consulting over the powers of the regulator of social housing to tackle non-decent homes and that ministers were introducing a decent homes standard for the private rented sector. She added, "It is completely unacceptable that families are having to live in homes without heating and we are acting to ensure people can stay warm this winter. This includes £1,200 to help pay their bills." The decent homes standard requires all social homes to have an efficient form of heating, such as central heating, and we will also introduce this to privately rented homes to help those who use heating oil and fuel other than gas to warm their homes. We have increased the alternative fuel payment to £200 and are committed to delivering this to customers as soon as possible.
Path towards enlightenment.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam and welcome to our weekly episode of Path Towards Enlightenment, which is an endeavor to make you and us familiar with an easy and fluent explanation of God's final scripture to all mankind, the Noble Quran, that was revealed to the last and greatest of all messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. A fortnight ago, we completed explanation of Surah Munafiqun, and this Friday, we embark on explanation of the next surah, that is Surah Taghabun, which is number 64 in the serial order of compilation of the Noble Quran. Revealed in Medina, it has 18 ayahs and takes its name from the word Yaum At-Taghabun in ayah 9, which means the day of mutual loss and gain, and refers to the day of resurrection and judgment as the day of disposition, since on that day, everyone will try to save oneself and put the blame on others. For those who abandon faith and choose to disbelieve shall lose paradise and be thrown into hellfire, cheated forever from felicity by their own souls and their leaders. those who believe shall gain paradise against all the attempts of the unbelievers to distract them in the world from faith and goodness because of their guidance by God and His messengers to steer away from hellfire. The surah opens with a description of God's majesty, power, wisdom, and knowledge. It reminds the disbelievers of the miserable end of those who disbelieved before them, and decisively refutes their denial of the resurrection. The surah urges the believers to be wary but forgiving of the enemies they may have within their own families, and inspires them to remain steadfast and to spend in God's cause. According to a narration from the Prophet's 16th infallible heir, Imam Ja'far Sadiq, peace upon him, whoever recites Surah Taghabun in the ritual prayer as a part of religious obligations or on other occasions will be amongst the people of paradise on the day of resurrection, depending on fulfillment of Quranic and Islamic injunctions. Now, we invite you to listen to the opening two ayahs of the surah. Stay tuned, please.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم يسبح لله ما في السماوات وما في الأرض له الملك وله الحمد وهو على كل شيء قدير هو الذي خلقكم فمنكم كافر ومنكم مؤمن والله بما تعملون بصير.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful, whatever there is in the heavens and whatever there is in the earth, glorify Allah. To Him belongs all sovereignty, and to Him belongs all praise. And He has power over all things. It is He who created you. Then some of you are faithless, and some of you are faithful. And Allah sees best what you do. This surah, like some other ones, begins with glorification and praise of the one and only creator of the universe, to whom belongs all praise and power, who is glorified by each and everything. In other words, He is the sovereign glorified by all the world of existence, and He never wrongs anyone. However, it is unfortunate that some people, failing to worship and glorify God Almighty, commit sins and indulge in disbelief. Ayah 2 means to say that God has granted the human race the freedom of will and expression, which stem from the gifts of intellect and the power of speech, in order to differentiate good from evil and act accordingly. This ayah negates the flawed concept of predestination by focusing on faith and disbelief, through which stems a person's words and deeds. Allah is fully aware of what we do. These ayahs teach us that, number one, the entire creation, including animals, plants, and even inanimate objects, possess understanding, and thus they glorify the Almighty Creator. Number two, ingratitude and disbelief are the result of inadequate cognizance of God, or the complete lack of it. Number three, the Almighty Creator has power over all and everything. And number four, God has granted human beings the freedom to differentiate between right and wrong, and thus the consequences of their words and actions rest upon them. Let us listen to ayahs 3 and 4 of the same surah.
خلق السماوات والأرض بالحق وصوركم فأحسن صوركم وإليه المصير يعلم ما في السماوات والأرض ويعلم ما تسرون وما تعلنون والله عليم بذات الصدور.
He created the heavens and the earth with reason, and He formed you and perfected your forms, and toward Him is the destination. He knows whatever there is in the heavens and the earth, and He knows whatever you hide and whatever you disclose, and Allah knows best what is in the breast. These two ayahs further elaborate the purpose of creation of the universe, which is based on reason and is proceeding towards the single goal of the boundless being, that is, the infinite existence of God, as could be reflected by the forms given to us with the objective of achieving perfection. The creation of human beings as the best of creation inspires us to proceed from the realm of the horizons and enter that of the souls, saying that God fashioned us with pleasing shapes, pleasant appearances, and an embellished heart enlightened by reason and wisdom. As Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him, the vicegerent of the Prophet of Islam, says in one of his sermons that God Almighty created specimens from the entire world of existence in the human beings, which means macrocosms is epitomized in microcosm. In other words, a brief glimpse at the creation of our body and soul reflects that the human being is the most beauteous of all the creatures in the world of existence, and God created this being in the best form, and the Almighty Creator's omnipotence is manifest therein. Ayah 3 closes by saying that the final return of all things is toward God Almighty. Man is a constituent element of the organic world of existence. The best means to abstain from committing sins and maintaining the fear of God Almighty is the concept of His omniscience and the fact that our beloved Creator is fully aware of all our deeds. He is all aware of all that is manifest and hidden throughout the heavens and on the earth, even in our hearts and minds. From these ayahs, we learn that, number one, the creation of the universe is not haphazard and unplanned, but rather in accordance with a specific aim. Number two, everything moves towards the boundless being of the Almighty Creator and encompassed by His infinite power. Number three, God is aware of our secret deeds and hidden intentions and motives. And number four, it is proper cognizance of God that prevents us from committing sins and inspires us to do good deeds. On this note, we conclude this week's episode of Path Towards Enlightenment.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.